what we suggest as an important net income of oil and gas companies in Alaska. After making this comparison of the taxes of these eight states, the department found that Alaska ranked fourth behind the states of Louisiana, Wyoming, and California under existing law. Specifically, the total taxes from 1977 through 1986 for Alaska totaled $7.6 billion, which was $2.2 billion below Louisiana, the highest state. I believe the committee has a handout which summarizes the comparative tax burdens in the other states, showing the property tax amounts, severance tax amounts, and the income tax amounts in each state. It might be helpful to show graphically how Alaska fits in with the rest of the states. We have first Louisiana, the highest state, which is a combination of severance tax, property tax, and income tax. For the 10 years, reached a total of $9.8 billion. Louisiana has a 12.5 severance tax on oil, a 7 cents per MCF tax rate on gas. It has a property tax on hardware, which we have found to be taxed at an adjusted millage rate of around 13.5 mils, and an income tax at a 4% tax rate. The second state in the ranking is Wyoming, which we show as $8.3 billion total for the 10 years. Wyoming has a severance tax which totals 10%, 4% to the state, and 6% which goes to the municipality. Wyoming also has a property tax on hardware properties, much as Alaska, and we have found the adjusted millage rate to be approximately 15 mils. The third state in rank is California, which although it doesn't have a severance tax, it does have a property tax, not only on oil and gas hardware properties, but also on oil and gas reserves. We found that the adjusted millage rate, the average adjusted millage rate statewide in California, is 28.5 mils, and that its income tax is 9% on corporate income. We get a total of $8.3 billion for the 10-year period. Alaska, we found in the ranking of these other states, to be fourth. For a total taxes, a property tax, severance tax, and income tax of $7.6 billion. Very close to Alaska, in the middle of the range of states, is Texas, which has a severance tax of 4.6% on oil, 7.5% on gas, and property tax also on hardware and on oil and gas reserves at an average millage rate of approximately 16 mils. can also see the other states of Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Kansas. Appalachia found tax burdens lower than Alaska. We have found that Alaska, far from being at the very top presently under current law, is in the mid-range of the state. We have also made a comparison of how Alaska would rank after if the administration proposals were passed. That is, if the income tax, the severance tax, and the property tax rate were passed. We have found that with the inclusion of these new changes in the tax structure, that Alaska's tax structure would be raised to approximately 9.6 or just under Louisiana. In summary, I might just say that again, we do not believe the claim of oil industry that Alaska's tax base presently is the highest in the nation, and that a comparison with other states is only one item in a number of factors that should be looked at. Alaska could set its tax rates and its structures based upon the state's needs and not necessarily follow the lead of other states. With the production of Poudre Bay, Alaska will become the largest oil and gas producing state in the nation. And as Commissioner Gallagher has stated, we must divide tax revenue from our various taxes to cover not only our own ongoing expenses, but to provide oil and gas revenues for future Alaska. We think that these proposals are modest changes in our tax structure to eliminate loopholes in our income tax, to cure deficiencies in our property tax, and to provide insurance for the state in the seventh tax from depressed prices. And that's my comments that I have on the Alaska tax burden. I believe Mr. Williams has some comments on another thing.
Before getting directly into the substance area of my remarks, I'd like to make an observation about a feeling that's been expressed by members of the legislature that why do we have to act now? The federal government is going to be making decisions for its government. What the agency is asking now, and the problems will, by implication, go away if the government is behind. The fact is that the problems and uncertainty of the government is not about the federal government. The Federal Energy Administration is making the president and the federal government. Submitting a report to Congress to report to Congress about spiking the flood too. Do not resolve all the uncertainty. They can't. For one thing, the FDA does not cite the responsibility of setting the contract timeline yet. We have allegations from NASA across everyone, which must be explored, and if confirmed, would affect the rate base, which includes the cost of the tariff that may be charged. Further, the Interstate Commerce Commission is reviewing its decision, which is based on the 1940s, as to how to calculate on interstate pipeline. Moreover, we have our own Alaska Pipeline Commission, which is going to be exploring the possibilities for rate making for moving through the pipeline entirely within Alaska. At this time, then, it is impossible to say what the railhead will mean. The Federal Energy Administration decision will not fix the railhead site because the FDA does not set floors, except in the ceiling. Right now, it looks as though the ceiling is going to be sufficiently high, but the railhead site is not going to be artificially restrained by the railhead. But exactly where it does fall, still going to be largely a function of the transatlantic pipeline system, and further, a function of how large the West Coast crude oil surplus will be, and where the surplus oil will be moved to, and at what extent. Moreover, even if the FDA were to somehow magically resolve all the problems existing for us, we still would not have the stability and the certainty that we would desire. Thank you for joining us on the right first of next year, and every 90 days thereafter, the world may be changed. This is in the Federal Flight Control Statute itself, which provides for the 90 days in June, the world may be changed. Every 90 days, the world may be changed. The same uncertainty is going to be leading up to the decision of the United States. Will we certainly, in fact, during the remainder of this presidency period, like yourself, and it would be unlikely that the federal government, by virtue of its tight control of the country, will be resolving the uncertainty of the past. Association, which is burning gas, electric generation, and the river. into again an increase in 1977 from 287 to about $7.44. Once again, $4.57. There on your tax bill, the average user used 7,960 kilowatt hours, 2.6 cents per kilowatt hour. And your average bill was $210.96. So you cost $4.50 out of over $300. And so, about a 1% increase in the cost. By comparison, if you're bringing to the committee's attention the fact that I've been pushing before the Public Utilities Commission right now for a 15% increase in its rate. Consequently, these are impact on Anchorage consumers are going to be, by comparison, very slight in comparison to the rate increases that have recently been allowed and very competitive, likely to be expected to use. By comparison, I'd like to direct the committee's attention to Table 2, when they turned out to have that. On the first page. When compared, Pluto Bay revenue, the gas revenue from Pluto Bay, between the present half and half the first. You can see at a glance that it's by 1985, which is in gas production, it's $49. And the existing tax revenues, which is tax to generate roughly $26.8 million annually. And the proposal that could be increased to 73, nearly $50 million increase. I submit to the committee that for a $4.50 increase to energy users in 1977, admitting that it will rise 2 times. But still, percentage-wise, you know, a very small percentage of their cost for anything, to manage or anything like that. But these revenue advantages more than offset the slight cost. We've also heard, and this is the second part of what I'd like to say, that the tax proposal for the storage exploration and development by increasing the cost of doing business in Alaska. I'd like to demonstrate to you that in fact the impact on the decision making to adjust or not adjust would be relatively slightly affected by this. And the effect would probably be to an insignificant amount as long as it's some mathematical information sent into the decision. All companies are guilty in a way if I were still having my attention to one thing to be making the decisions on a cold weather basis. Rather than on the basis of emotional reaction. The Wainwright Security Company is rather an impartial activity that's developed a series of revenue forecasts for the Pluto Bay Area, calculating the various states and unfunded taxes, including what remains. So the age of 1959 through the end of the field of this is called cash flow, where there's a negative number that means it's functioning and it's actually a previous income from the state agency and the expenses. However, once production begins, income will accrue from cash flow will become positive. Making the decision whether to invest or not to invest, the alternative are running on what is called discounted cash flow analysis. There's an rate of return for projected for different investments, and then more rent. So it's just higher rate of return than you can expect because it means to have a higher degree of cash development during the course of time. So it's a lesser rate of return, will be less profitable for the company or the investment. And therefore, if there's a limited amount of money available, they would just suffer for a while. ionized as the cash flow developed by Raynaud's theorem indicates that the increase in cash flow, the result of that effect, will affect the rate of return, the decision-making time, by only 0.9%. Under the present cash flow, if you look at the set of three tables that are attached under the long page, if you look on the third page, you'll find the statement that in the paragraph that the rate of return for fetal day, I'm sorry, I don't think the first one. Okay, if you return to the third page, in the text there that appears, the first paragraph, the very last sentence says, the actual rate of return for fetal day under the present tax regime is found to be 26.3%. In the next paragraph explains that, stated rather, that under the proposed taxes, the discounted cash flow rate of return is 25.4%. And this regard, I have to point out in the areas that appears in the night, because it's 19.1. These grants, these Gundo numbers, all the possibilities to how it was, they could have come up with a 19.1% rate of return, and it failed to find how they could do it. With the numbers that they present in their appendix B, we find that by end of year discounting, we get 25.4, with mid-year discounting, which is just of a subtle distinction, whether you think the cash is being expended at the end of the year or whether you think it is being expended in the middle of the year for average people. And we can hardly have any effect at all on the rate of return. So that's not the difference here. It's simple at a loss of strength. We're about to find out that the 19.1% that Wainwright said that the rate of return for fetal day was low, in fact, is 25.4% under our proposed taxes, using the revenue forecast for cash flow development by Wainwright. The difference, therefore, is between 26.3% and 25.4% or 19.1%. There are other factors which has so much greater influence on the decision making and on the rate of return than the seventh tax statement that this 9.1% is really meaningless in this. For instance, the assumption about field productivity, which is always a difficult question. How fast will the field be? How long? How much oil will you get out of it? Very, very difficult question to answer with any degree of certainty until you build the field up. But the decision to go and develop or not to develop must be made, obviously, before it's done, at the time of discovery. Therefore, there's a great degree of uncertainty here, and the impact of a slight change in the attention to garden productivity will be far greater than 9.1% of the GPS rate of return. Similarly, the assumed expense way up the field when people operate has a far greater impact on the rate of return than this 19.1% to return. The delay between discovery and when the field can come on the scene is another thing. Perhaps it's the most crucial factor of that. Because the whole purpose of the discounted cash flow analysis is to recognize the time value of money. If you offered me the following year, I pay you the dollar next July. In exchange for you paying me a dollar in July 1978, I'd be a fool to take you up on it, because during the year, you could earn income from the dollar. That interest is the time value of money. This kind of cash flow analysis recognizes this fact, time value of money. Therefore, the lead time between discovery And then you start earning your profit. It's very important. The longer it's deferred, the smaller the profit will be. And finally, another secret tax is far more important than any seventh tax or combination tax to show the last one. It's a wealth tax. The assumptions that you have to make about wealth tax, cost of doing the market, what the market will be doing the last year. Again, they all have a far greater interest and introduce a far greater uncertainty into the rate of return on assets. Therefore, the conclusion is that a 0.9% impact on the rate of return is too small to be significant in light of the uncertainty necessarily involved in all these other more important variables.
I just want to make one comment on it. On the draft 7 tax, as you pointed out, the anchored consumer will pay. The anchored consumer will be paying a very small share of it. Most of that money will be paid by the Japanese consumers. But in spite of that, Western and the other committee of the House is a definite bill that gives anchored consumer a residential fuel credit of up to $10. We've shown that the increase in taxes is between $5 to $9, and we're, on the other hand, we're doing a $10 credit in another bill reduction in the House Finance Committee, and we think it's quite sufficient.
We used the same method in that we took the Alaska property values, production, and income, and superimposed the tax structures of the other states. There is one difference. We used current dollars in our projection, and Ohio used the constant dollars in their projection. And in addition, Ohio looked at only Alaska, California, Texas, and Louisiana, and we have extended that comparison to four other major oil and gas producing states. Yes, we included the total state tax rate, being both state and local, the tax is paid in those states. So the property tax in other states is a very important tax to the municipalities, and they do tax extensively oil and gas properties. include not only the hydro, but the oil and gas in the ground. That is not the case in Alaska, but only the states and municipalities are possibly carrying in the hydro topic. It's in the handout, showing that what the changes would be under House Bill 321 through 322. I would guarantee you 26, because we didn't develop the cash flow. What we did is cut the cash flow, that is to say, each year's expenditure, each year's income income that was developed by women, the advisors and investors, and seemed to be a new proposal. They've got a 70-some page study that recently came out. We just simply took those cash flows, which is to say, the net income for all expenses. So each year, you can go figure, and said, what rate of return makes the present value of all this zero? That's how you do the discount cash flow now. Unlike 19.1%, which is what they said in the study, produced that result. 19.1% produces the result of the $200 million. We found that you had to be 26.3. Just using those numbers. Now, I'm not saying whether those numbers are true or accurate or anything else. It's simple to illustrate. The numbers are useful for purposes of illustrating the impact. But I would say this, that's a series of numbers that at least one investment advisory company is willing to put enough faith in to advise clients. And using those numbers, you get 26.3. I'm sorry, you get 25.4 with our tax return, which is what their numbers suggest. Based on our assumptions to derive the tax cost so we can generate how it would be under the present tax structure, it would be 26.3.
We would have to analyze and we need to be able to report back on how they got there. We'd be happy to do that for you. One of the small features, and the one you've seen is the Morikata cash flow analysis, this same cash flow that was done by the FDA, but it went something unusual in there called a risk multiplier, where they took all the assets. Expenditure target discovery and multiply it by a factor of 4 to get this. They took the assets and times them by 4 and then took the cash flow against them. And sure enough, the cash flow never came in low.
I think what comes to mind a possible explanation for most, if not all, of the difference in its cash flow would depend on whether the 17.1 rate of return that you were referring to, or whatever it is, so in terms of $1976, or dollars of constitution, the 25.4% is in terms of nominal dollars, that is,
as you go through time, inflation reduces the buying power, so you have to spend more dollars to accomplish the same thing.
Okay. Another feature might be is that we type on computer internet.
I would still make the same point, even if you took both numbers that generated the 17.6 over the 10. The difference in the impact of the result of the tax is probably not change that 17.6 by even 1% by 60%.
You know, so it's going to be a moment for them back to them. Well, one was because we know what the gas is always in the base. We remember it. Yeah, because we're because it isn't a discrepancy because it'll never fit up to this success box. I'm quite familiar with some of the tax administrators in other states, and familiar with, I believe it's the North Dakota 30% 7% on coal, Montana 25% 7% on coal. New Mexico has before them for such a time a 20% to 30% 7% on coal. One interesting feature of meeting with the annual tax administrators is that the tax commissioner from the state of Montana was holding up this headline of being, you know, Detroit Free Press and describing us as Montana's blue-eyed Arabs of the West. And one of the studies that the state of Montana did was to trace that tax on coal all the way through the system. And one of the things they found out that Detroit itself, when it got down to Detroit's burners, they had a 5% tax on utilities, on electric bills, and they found out that tax produced more with a heavier burden than Montana's government tax. The final conclusion. The cost of alternate energy sources have risen rapidly. The alternate cost of energy for years has been quite a bit above the price of oil. And due to oligopolies and monopolies and everything else, the American consumer and the world consumer has been getting a tremendous price break over what the real world could dictate. In other words, price would be always pricing alternative supply. And the Arabs realized that the alternate energy cost was considerably above where it could be in true terms of economic sense. And so they adjusted it. And so what the Arabs did was, he was not a political gesture, but it was an economic issue to raise the prices. Now, as to our leases, as to our royalty share, we felt that we could get 1/8 of the wellhead value. The wellhead value in a lot of sense is still being held down below what actually should be priced in the real world. If our energy in Alaska is priced the alternate energy supply, maybe we would get quite a bit more at the wellhead. So I don't worry our cost system is adjusting to that or not. Maybe we could be getting rate, but to me, it's on a higher number.
You want to kind of like to ask a question? Yeah, I'd like to make a final observation, and that is, anybody who's looking at industry, the person involved, does not expect and can't reasonably expect a guarantee that that state passes, that might remain as they are at the time of investment, forever during the life. Cost of service for government services, too.
Well, back in the day, it just kind of slow. You were trying, and you started producing oil in 1972, so you'd show a lot higher rate of return to the investors. So that wasn't due to the state of Alaska lowering the rate of return. In fact, we're only here lowering it by 0.9. The federal government or whoever was responsible for delaying the setup of construction is really responsible for lowering the rate of return, and that's the state of Alaska.
I would like to make a comment on your question too on it. As pointed out earlier in this week, there's game played by the industry in mixing the state's taxing power with the state's contract power. And the state, when it sold its leases, was clearly acting as a landowner, doing a portion for the landowner. But that doesn't mean that the state has to substitute because it's the landowner that it gives up its taxing power. In fact, the Alaska Constitution says that the state's taxing power shall never be contracted away. Mm-hmm. And if the state, there's no guarantee that the state will keep its tax structure the same, and that the state has an obligation to constantly revise its tax structure in view of its the needs of its citizens. So again, I think it's two separate concepts that should be kept separately, kept separate. Acting in two capacities, acting as a landowner to make sure that it gets its farmer share, and also through its taxing power to make sure that each segment of the economy contributes to the entire state, and with regard to natural resources, that those taxes contribute to future Alaskans as well.
Thank you.
Yeah.